Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, and we're going to be visiting today about plants that have edible fruit. We'll talk about plants that you can grow that the deer won't eat or aren't likely to eat anyway. Liz Freemuth has a lot of experience with that. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business, called The Garden Hoe. And it's great to have her with us today to talk about your own issues or things that are even going well. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Liz Freemuth, welcome back.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Larry. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, it's always fun to have you here. You provide concierge horticultural services. Tell us a bit more about your business.
My business revolves around what my clients need. And sometimes I can provide that or my staff can provide that. Other times it's finding someone who will fit the need of what they have to have done in their landscape. Sometimes it's even training staff. And so it's, it really depends on what they need. Then that's what we look at providing.
And you work all around Wisconsin and outside the state as well.
Yeah, I do. We've got Illinois, Indiana, Georgia, Florida, kind of travel a little bit, and that's fun. it's wonderful because Florida hits in February, so who doesn't want to go to Florida for a little bit in February? So that's fabulous. But yeah, wonderful clients, wonderful people, and as my Hoettes are called. They like to call themselves the Ho Nation. So the Ho Nation is out there working hard while I'm in here doing this today. So
well,
I thank them for that.
Really glad to have you here. Let's take a look at fruit-bearing plants.
Yeah.
What recommendations do you have for fruit-bearing plants?
Well, there, you know, before we even recommend particular plants, we have to take a look at what the site is and what you want out of it. People who don't like chemicals are not going to be happy raising apples that traditionally need a lot of spray. Peaches do not do particularly well here without some hands-on and some really intensive care. Even those that are bred for kind of northern climates, they don't do particularly well. So it depends on what you want to put into it. I have been experimenting with a product called Surround that's a kaolin clay with a little bit of polymer in it, and that is good for organic production. You're not going to get insects and diseases to completely go away. It creates a physical barrier of the clay on the leaves and on the fruit, and so it does help. It helps repel the critters and the diseases to go someplace else where it's a little bit easier to attach. So you have to take a look at that, and what is your soil like? You know, so we start taking a look at all of those things, then it's like, what do you want to get out of it? You know, do you want to grow blueberries just for the sake of telling your neighbor you grew blueberries? Then you do them in a container so that you can, around here, you know, there's a few spots where the pH is low enough. So if you want to do that, then container garden. If you want something fabulous for the yard, then you start taking a look at what will grow with minimal kind of effort. Pears are fabulous because they may spot a little bit, but they're really, you're going to get a decent crop out of them to start with. Honeyberries are also a new and upcoming fruit that's in the honeysuckle family, but not
honeyberries.
Honeyberry, yeah, it's an elongated kind of purple-blue fruit. And in the honeysuckle family, you know, basically that's weeds that do a little bit good production once in a while. This is one of those. It has a texture kind of like a blueberry, but it doesn't taste like one. But elongated kind of purple-blue. Again, honeysuckle family grows easily, but it does need pollination partners. So that's an interesting one. Goji berries, a super fruit that I've been experimenting with for 4 or 5 years, and they've been surprising.
How's that spelled?
G-O-J-I.
Oh.
And it's not a pleasant shrub to be around, so you don't want to put it where people are going to brush against it because it does have thorns on it. But that's one of those super fruits. Red, small. It fruits on old wood, so you cut it after it fruits, and then you leave it alone, and it will do what it's going to do. Marginally hardy for Wisconsin, so I'd say the lower half, but really has been doing pretty good. And that one was questionable as to whether we were going to get overwintering, so that one's working well.
And that's one we can eat?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yep. All of these are, you know, kind of the common ones that we forget about eating, and I know Scott Craven talks about it, has talked about it for years, is the Juneberry, you know, the Amelanchier, mm-hmm. that those are absolutely delicious, but you have to beat the birds to them. And that can be kind of a tough one with any of the small fruits that you're growing in the yard. Some that I experiment with in cooking are quince. And, you know, quince is making kind of a resurgence in food. And,
yes.
you know, it's fabulous with goat cheese. You make a nice little paste out of that, and it's fabulous with goat cheese. And it's a really easy fruit to grow. You have to get the right one. It's not the flowering quince, but the tree quince. It's a Cydonia. And don't do anything to it.
Just a nice citrusy flavor.
Floral.
Floral.
It actually is a floral. It's in the... I think it's in the rose family, and it's very fragrant. The fruit itself is very fragrant and has a bit of a floral overtone to it, and so you have to kind of like that. But it's interesting to cook with because you cook the entire thing. It's hard as a rock. You almost need an axe to cut into it. But it's an easy one to grow. If the branches break, you just slice and, you know, clean up the break, and it'll just keep going on and on. So that's a nice one. Huge fruit too. You know, you're looking at something bigger than an apple. So it's cool.
Very cool. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, and I haven't given the number, so let me do that right now. You may have a question or comment as we talk. We're visiting about fruits right now. We also want to talk about stuff that deer won't eat with her and a whole lot more. Call in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. You may hear some sort of siren-y sounds in the background as we're visiting here. And what that is there's a fire drill in the building, I believe. And we don't have to leave because I don't think the place is on fire. So there you go. Muriel from Spring Green emailed us to say that last year she had a bumper crop of her mulberry tree. But this year, there isn't a berry to be seen. Do these bear every other year?
Not usually, no. Mulberries will bear every year. And with most fruiting crops, you may get one year that's a little bit better than another one. Now, this year, if you remember, we had that late frost.
Yeah.
And that took out a lot of mulberries everywhere. So not just Spring Green, but my trees have virtually nothing. There's maybe 3 or 4 little mulberries on them, and that's it. So, and those are the ones that were hidden underneath the leaves. So, no, typically not. They will produce every year.
I want to go back because I forgot to ask you. You were talking about some of the different berries that you had. Mm-hmm. Where do we get these? Where do you find these plants?
You know, I like Jung's. It's a good Wisconsin company for mm-hmm. berries. There's also a fantastic online company that's out of Virginia, and we've had good luck in Wisconsin with them. The place is called Edible Landscaping, and it's ediblelandscaping.com. And there's almost anything and everything you'd want to find in a fruit. They have it. And we'll tell you where it's hardy and where it isn't hardy. And again, we've used a lot of their product and it's been fantastic. But Jung is great also. And a lot of the local garden centers will carry fruit that they know is really good for the area. Blackberries are a tough one. So if you can, you know, if you can find a good blackberry around here, that's fantastic.
Jenny in Janesville has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Jenny. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I just thought of one other fruit I want to ask about. I'm just wondering how dates, figs, and plums would grow up here.
Plums, did you say was the last one?
Yes.
Yeah.
In Janesville.
Okay, plums will do just fine. It depends on what you're looking for out of a plum. Stanley and Mount Royal seem to be about the most disease-resistant for this area and good in fruit production. Dates, not unless you're going to take them in and out of the house. Same thing. There's some figs. Brown turkey does do okay here. And there's one other one, I can't think of the name right off the top of my head, that will grow okay. But you're not going to get the type of fig production that you would a little bit further south. Dates and figs, if you want some unusual ones, you can take them in and out of the house and they'll do okay.
All right. Thanks, Jenny. Appreciate the call.
Yep.
You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Ruth and Nina next. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering about, she hasn't mentioned aronia berry, and I'm wondering how long it takes before they produce.
With any fruit-producing tree and or shrub, you're looking at probably about 3 to 4 years if it's an early producing. How long have you had your aronia in?
I haven't, but a friend of mine has had them. Last year it was 4 years, and he hadn't gotten anything yet.
Does he have one type, or does he have more than one?
I'm not sure, but he's quite a gardener, so I'm sure he has more than one. But I will ask him next time I see him.
Ask him, because it might be that it will produce better if he's got another cultivar to actually pollinate with it. Aronia, I do believe, will produce on its own, but sometimes it might need that little extra jab of something else to help with the pollination. But again, about 3-4 years. There is one, and I don't remember which cultivar it was, that took 6 to actually produce a good crop of fruit.
Yeah.
So, but it was quite small when they got it, and just had some patience. And is it in full sun or is it in partial shade?
It's in full sun.
Okay, that usually we only see a bit of a fruit production lessening in a heavy shade. So, I would suggest that maybe he look at getting another cultivar just to give it an added boost.
How long for honeyberry then?
Honeyberry, about 4 to 5 years.
Okay. And does that need cross-pollination too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, definitely it does. You will get maybe one or two, but that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for a much better production.
Yes.
And honeyberry is really, really cold hardy, so shouldn't have any issues with cold on that at all.
Okay. And you mentioned someone called in about figs trees. Well, my sister has, she planted them in the house. She has a really nice sunroom where they get sun all winter and all summer. Last year she got 45 figs off her tree.
Oh, isn't that fantastic?
That's
isn't that
wonderful.
Unbelievable?
Fantastic. Was that a late season crop off of that?
They've got them on right now and they're getting bigger. So
excellent.
I would imagine by another month or two, they'll be eating them.
I know that down south, the fig trees get huge down south. I'm talking in Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And I know that the early season crop, because there'll be one like right smack when the leaves start opening up, in fact, the fruit will start forming before the leaves fully expand.
Uh-huh.
California also. That first crop is not always the best tasting. And so I tell people, don't get discouraged if they didn't taste like you were expecting them to. The second crop, the later crop really is much better. So for us, I think we miss that first icky crop and get just the beautiful ones.
Yeah, I don't remember her talking about a first crop.
Yeah.
But I have seen the ones that she gets, and they're beautiful.
Oh, how wonderful.
But she does prune it back,
because
it gets quite large. She does have it in a huge pot, and she has put some outside, but usually she's just keeping them inside now.
No.
They make fantastic houseplants if you've got space for them.
Yes, I'll say. Well, thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Ruth, for calling. Appreciate it. We have more callers online. Let's turn to Amy and Delavan next. Amy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have a little predicament at my house. I live in the woods, and we apparently have wild mulberry trees coming up in the woods. But we never get any mulberries. And I told my husband, I don't think it's a mulberry tree. So is there any way you can tell? Because I'm a little frustrated.
And you want the mulberries? A lot of people take them out.
I applaud you.
Yeah,
we want them.
Applaud you. I actually do have a mulberry tree in my pasture, full sun, perfect growing conditions, that has had 2 or 3 white fruits on it, and that is it. So that one was not planted. I assume that it's more of a white mulberry. It's got leaves that don't have the cuts in it. As deep a cuts as what a mulberry leaf does.
Okay, well, this one does have the deep cuts. It has all the indications of being mulberry trees, but they don't produce. Like,
how long? How old?
10 years.
If they're in shade too, you may not actually get much for fruit, because
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's one that loves the sun. And so you may actually, if this is something that you want, you might want to dig one of those up and put it in a more sunny spot if you can. And I would do that early spring rather than now. Typically when you start moving deciduous stuff before the end of July, you're really taking a risk And then you have to move it very carefully and make sure you keep it watered. So, you know, these are freebies. You could try away. Why not? You know, so if you have the time and you can afford the loss of one or two, you might want to give it a whirl. But you have to keep it very well watered and make sure you mulch around the base.
I will wait.
You wait, yeah.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Try it in the sun, and you should be fine. As long as you have plenty around, you should be fine to get fruit on it.
And Amy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Liz Freemuth, concierge horticultural services extraordinaire, and she owns her business, The Garden Hoe. We've got a link to it on our Facebook page, if I'm not mistaken. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill DeDoer, on-air producer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next Friday on Garden Talk, the Vicars of Vegetables will be back with us to take your gardening questions, so I hope you can join us for that. In the meantime, Liz Freemuth with us, her business, The Garden Hoe, talking about, well, we've been visiting a lot about edible fruit plants, and we were going to also, we will get to the things, the plants that deer don't like to eat with her as well. You can join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Marilyn on Facebook asks, what is the best mulch to use to overwinter strawberries and asparagus plants? They have experienced a lot of dieback.
I like to use a good clean straw or a marsh hay, something that you know is going to be a little bit less of a problem with those weed seeds.
Yeah.
And then you make sure that the ground is frozen solid before you put that down. And I think your gurus of veggies can actually answer that stuff better, but if they've got any more suggestions on that. But that's really what you would look at doing. Wait until the ground freezes solid, then you mulch over those plants, and that should help out quite a bit.
Becky in Wauwatosa emailed to ask about growing some of the lesser-known fruits in her southeast Wisconsin garden. She's considering lingonberries, cranberries, currants, or gooseberries.
You know, cranberries and lingonberries, I'm not sure if we're too warm for those. We've tried cranberries at one client's place, and they did not survive well. So those might be a little questionable. Currants do okay here, most definitely. What we do have to worry about with currants are their proximity to white pine. When you have currants and gooseberries, anything in that family, and white pines, you can actually get a blister rust. You're looking at about 100 feet distance, and even at that, that's a little questionable depending on the wind. So yeah, you can do it. Just be aware that if you have white pine, you may lose one or the other of those plants. But currants and gooseberries do fine. We've actually even done well with jostaberries, which are a blend in southeast Wisconsin. They've got a little bit bigger fruit, and they do really quite well.
What are those again?
Jostaberries. It's a cross between gooseberries and currants, and I'm not sure what all else is in there, but it's a wonderful, wonderful blend. And you get some kind of, it almost has more of a musty taste to the fruit, but a pleasant musty. So it's just a little bit different than a currant and a gooseberry. It's quite lovely. Another thing to try in southeast Wisconsin is actually medlar. Mespelis is the scientific name for that, but that is a fantastic fruit, and its common name in England is called open arse fruit, and it has a very open bottom on it, and it's one that you store over winter, and it softens. Otherwise, it's hard as a rock in fall, and you think it's not ready. But you pick it, store it in a little bit cool area over winter, and then you can eat it in the spring. It softens, and it's almost like slightly apple-y custard when you cut into it. It's an interesting fruit, but they do really quite well in southeast Wisconsin.
So you'd have some fruit early then to eat in the spring, which would be really nice. Oh, great idea. And what's it again called?
Medlar or open arse fruit is the common name. Mespelis is the scientific. Yep.
Well, let's go to Al in La Crosse next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. I have a pesty question. I've lived here 63 years and never had problem with thistles, but evidently somebody's feeding birds, and they are really bad. I have the thistle that gets a little yellow flower. Now, some of those I can pull up all right, but the Canadian one, what the purple, is very, very rampant, and I don't know if they I'm trying to cut off the blossoms so they don't recede, but do I wait for fall and cut them down the root and put something on them?
Canadian thistle, I would say you start attacking as soon as you see them. You do not pull those. Those actually spread by rhizome. And so if you pull those out, you're actually going to create more plants popping up through the top. If you are not able to go out and spray those, and I'm not really big on spraying things because I live around farm fields, so I get plenty of spray anyway. But that's an instance where you really do need to control because it will get out of hand in a big, big, big hurry. And I've found what works quite well is to do it in a two-man process. Somebody cuts them off and somebody else goes through and sprays or paints them with Roundup. And you need to do that again and again and again. So I would not wait, go through and do it once. You're going to have to go through and do it again, and you'll have to go through and do it again and again and again, I hate to say. The yellow ones, the small, tiny yellow flowers, which really we've seen a horrible explosion of those over the last, like, 2-3 years, those do pull up easily if you get them early. But yes, definitely all thistles, get them out before they go to seed. Even those that spread by rhizome, they spread by seed also.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Gail in Bellevue up next. Hi, Gail.
Hi there. I'm just driving home from picking up some seeds at Jones, and I got wildflower seeds and wild grasses, the whole blend. And in the directions, it tells me everything about how to prepare them to take them out of dormancy by putting them, treating them, and then putting them in the refrigerator. But it seems to me that naturally it would be better just to distribute them in the fall and let them go through the winter like natural seeds would. And I'm wondering if you can give me some guidance on that, whether or not that would be okay. And if so, what do I need to do? Are there any special considerations?
You can definitely do that. You can mimic nature. What you are going to probably find is that you may lose more seed doing it that way, because you are going to lose some to either too much moisture where they may rot out, or they may not get enough moisture and they won't germinate fast enough in the spring. But if you put them out now and take them out of that dormancy, you will get some growth, and you should get enough growth so that they can harden off before winter comes. So you're basically dealing with a small plant as opposed to an unknown seed. But I think either way would be fine. It depends actually on how much you're willing to sacrifice in loss. I think you might end up with less loss by helping nature along a little bit, but that's that's kind of a personal call for you to make. But you definitely could mimic nature with it.
There we go.
Now, if I do go with doing it myself, and would now be a good time, or should I wait until the spring? Or it seems like it's too hot to be starting something now.
Well, fall is actually a good time to do anything that flowers, and so what you've got is a mix that you're not doing the optimal for everything. You're doing what's good for all of them at this time. So I think, yeah, definitely you could go ahead and do it in August and you still would have plenty of time. So by the time you prep it and get it out in August, you'll still be good.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Alan Bayview up next. Hi, Al. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a mature pawpaw tree.
Cool.
And is there any way to pollinate it without adding another tree next to it?
Yeah.
If I have to, can I put a young tree right next to a mature tree?
Sure, you can do that. What pollinates pawpaw trees, you're going to love this. What pollinates pawpaw trees is actually a blowfly that feeds on dead fish. So are you near water anyplace?
Oh, yeah, it's right on a river.
Well, then you should actually have plenty of, and how old is this tree?
Probably about 8 years old, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, I actually, when we plant pawpaw trees, we put multiples in. And the blowfly off of the dead fish is what pollinates them. And the flowers on them are absolutely gorgeous.
So it has to be a dead fish? It cannot be, like, rotten meat?
No, it definitely is one. I kid you not that feeds on dead fish. And and that's why people have so much better luck growing fruit when they're actually near a body of water that has fish that will die, and, you know, and that's fantastic. So a river's perfect, probably.
Do I need to hang the fish from the tree?
No, absolutely not. You could probably just throw it down on the ground. But usually if you're close enough, if you're within 100 feet, that's generally enough to get the blowfly to pollinate. I actually might plant another one just to be on the safe side. Off the top of my head, because I know we've planted the same one, the same cultivar, in a grouping. And it did take, I think it was almost 9 years before we got fruit off of them.
What time of year should I do that?
Spring. What you're looking for is just barely after the leaves start opening up, you'll see small bell-shaped flowers that are going to hang down under the leaves. They're maroon in color, and anytime you see a maroon or a brown flower, that generally is pollinated by a fly or a beetle or something like that.
It's too late to do it now.
It's too late now. The fruit is already forming for the year. And and it's a great understory tree, so you can add small ones in there, and they will be absolutely perfect. They really only need a lot of light once they get to be about 20, 25 feet high. And that's, you know, their own natural going from an understory tree to just being in the overstory. So putting a small one in, it should do fine.
Yeah, there you go.
How far away from the tree, though? 10, 15 feet for another tree?
Yeah, you can do that, but they actually will cohabitate really nicely as a grouping. You know, so they're fine. You could probably easily go 10, 12 feet, and it'd be fine.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Greg and Stoughton, thank you for calling. Hi.
How you doing? I have some good news and some bad news about blackberries.
Okay.
We love both of them. Shoot.
Okay. The good news is I grow them in my backyard, and I got a few of them from my sister in the town of Oregon. The stalks grow to be 7 to 8 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
I am 6 feet tall, and they're a foot or two over my head, so I have to cut them so that I can reach them. The thorns are a half inch or larger. They're huge,
mm-hmm.
and the berry averages the size of the end digit of a man's thumb,
mm-hmm.
and they're prolific, and they're just wonderful. I've been to a lot of the garden centers, and nobody has them. And I just like, you know, people to know that these blackberry plants are just the most wonderful thing. Now, here's the bad news. I don't know what they're called.
Well,
you don't know which kind they are.
Right.
Well, you know, if they're thorned, yeah, good luck with that. And I don't know that there's really anybody that does small fruit identification, but you might actually try taking pictures or even taking samples to the fruit department here at UW-Madison.
Horticulture department.
Yeah, that somebody there might be able to at least get close to what it is, but the thorned, we do have some that grow wild along the woodland edges here, and they do fantastic. The ones that most people really love are the thornless because, you know, as you said, the thorns are half inch. It's pretty wicked.
My wife, I plant them. My wife picks them. She prepares them, and I eat them.
I think you've got a good deal there. I think you got a really good deal.
I like that. I like the way you think, Greg. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh,
thank
well,
you.
So, and, you know, if you send a photo into the horticulture department.
They might be able. Yeah.
Yeah, or even next week on Garden Talk, possibly Jim Nienhuis might know.
He might. And a lot of it is experience, so he's got a little bit of experience under his belt, too.
Yep.
I know a good thornless is called Triple Crown, and we've had okay luck with it in southeast Wisconsin, but I don't know how far north it'll go.
Okay. Thanks again, Greg. We turn to, let's turn to an email here. Sharon asked about sea berries. Are they invasive, and are they hard to harvest?
Oh, sea berries I don't have any experience with.
I don't either.
And I know what they look like, but I don't have any growing experience with them. I'm going to guess that for us, probably not, because that probably not invasive. I would think that they will grow, and I believe that that's also another Siberian plant, supposed to be quite good. But, you know, we have so little experience with some of these things. I know someone else had asked about whether honeyberries are invasive like other honeysuckles. I've not had that experience in the ones that I've grown. So I can say personally, they've not gone everywhere, most definitely. Mm-hmm. But whether they're left alone out in the woodland, they will spread like wildfire, that I don't know. And the same thing with sea berries. I don't think we have enough experience to actually say whether they're going to be horribly invasive for us here.
Forrest in Cottage Grove has something for us. Hi, Forrest.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
So I just wanted to have a couple of quick comments and a question for you. I lucked out, it seems like. I've got plenty of mulberry berries growing right along my property line. Just discovered them this season after moving into a new house. And we've just had a huge number of blackberries growing like crazy as well. So my question is, do you have any recommendations for any edible plants that grow well in partial or full shade? And they could be trees or ground plants, whatever you think would be best.
So, but you're looking for edibles.
Edibles, yes,
yeah.
Right.
And do you know what kind of soil or pH or anything you're dealing with?
Honestly, I do not.
Okay. And that's going to play into it, because one of the biggest and easiest, if you've got appropriate pH, is actually blueberries do fantastic in shade. They like a bit of sun, but they'll do fine in partial shade. And it's actually quite a lovely shrub once they're happy as a clam. But most of the shrubs we see are pathetic and disgusting looking and have two berries hanging on them in southeast Wisconsin. So not so much that. Pawpaw will do fantastic. The gentleman had called earlier about pawpaw. That is a wonderful, wonderful shade plant. It gets fruit that's like fat bananas on it and tastes rather custardy, kind of like a tropical custard fruit. Very tough. Really virtually no problems with that one whatsoever. And if you're looking for, winterberry actually does pretty good also in the shade. And in your part of the world, I think that would do okay also. It's a short plant. Spicebush, I believe, is going to be hardy for you. That's benzoin, and it is what you get benzoin from. But the berries are actually spicy and edible. That's a nice one, and that one grows in the shade. Aronia will grow in partial shade. Let's see. Blackberries, if you've got those, you know that those will do okay. And let's see. Off the top of my head, that's about all I can come up with for you.
Quite a few, actually.
Well, that's more than I had before.
Thanks, you're welcome to email me if you've got any further questions, too.
Well, thanks again.
All right, thanks. What's your email address?
Email address is, actually, just go to the, no, I better give it to you. It's Liz, L-I-S dot thegardenhoe, H-O-E, at gmail.com.
And your site, your website?
Thegardenhoe.com.
Thegardenhoe.com. And again, we have that up on our Facebook page. So we have Dorothy in Green Bay next. Hi, Dorothy.
Hello there. I have a recipe for that thistle problem that one person called in about. My local radio station had this on the air, and I thought, well, I'll try it. Anyway, it's 1 quart white vinegar, 1/4 cup table salt, and a dash of Dawn detergent or any detergent. And I had a huge thistle in my rose bush I couldn't get at. Boy, I killed it fast. And I use it on the grass between the driveway and such, and any place like that, so it works.
Yeah, I know that a lot of those things do work. I hesitate to have people do things with vinegar, and I know borax and other household type products, because those are chemicals also. And if you're dumping a lot of vinegar close to where your water is or where other things are, you know, you're going to get a reaction of some sort. So I'm sure it did kill it, and it probably did an excellent job. But without having research on the exact chemical properties that you're putting on the ground, I kind of hesitate to endorse something like that. Mm-hmm. I hate to say that, but yeah. But and while I'm not big on chemicals, to me, vinegar is a chemical also.
Yeah.
And so we do have to be careful as to what we're doing. So it worked for you. And I, you know, that's fantastic. Go mm-hmm. for it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dorothy, for calling. Appreciate it. And Irvin in Maryland, Wisconsin, up next. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I've planted some huckleberries this spring, and or garden huckleberries, actually. Will they grow every year, or are they just a one-year plant?
How far north are you?
Above Black River Falls, 10 miles.
Okay.
Are they in a protected site?
Yeah, they're along my greenhouse in a planter, in a garden planter.
If they're in a planter, I'm going to hazard a guess, although plants frequently surprise the dickens out of me because for some reason they don't read the books. I would say that if it's in a raised planter where the sides are exposed and that might be open to cold winds, you may not get them to survive, not unless you insulate that fairly well. So you may want to put a couple of bales around it or some, you know, pack some styrofoam or something like that, and you may actually get them to survive. That far north, I would suspect that it's going to be a single-year plant, not a multi-year. But even as a single-year plant, if it's producing, it's probably well worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they've got hundreds of berries on them, and I started them from seed this winter.
Oh, fantastic. Wonderful. Well, you might want to experiment then. If you started them from seed and they're producing for you, you might want to experiment and take, you know, dig up one, take it in, and kind of overwinter it in the greenhouse, and then see what happens to them outside. I'd be interested if you've got one that overwinters, because can't find anything that's hardy this far north.
All right.
Yeah, it's they're 4 foot tall right now. And
excellent.
Yeah, wonderful.
Excellent.
Thanks, Irvin. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, who provides concierge horticultural services in many areas in and out of the state, as a matter of fact, through her business, The Garden Hoe. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller and visiting with Liz Freemuth of The Garden Hoe. Great to have her along, and great to have you listening in. Call in 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Liz, didn't want to forget about this, and let's bring this into the conversation as well, and that is plants that deer don't eat.
Yeah,
Craven was on the show the other day, and we had more questions about, of course, they were talking a lot about vegetable gardens and things like that, but are there other plants?
There are. There are a handful, and I experiment quite a bit. I've got a lovely client down in Fontana, which is deer capital, and they've got horrible Lyme's disease. They've got everything, and their deer are so bad, and they're so used to people that I know one day pulling into the driveway, there's this big buck walking across the yard, and he kind of looked at me and gave me a chin nod. And it's like, seriously, come on, you guys are way too comfortable. So I've had a lot of experience in what they will and won't eat. And although it's off-label and not something I normally recommend, actually, they don't like malorganite, and they don't like the smell of it, and they stay away from it. Sometimes retraining those deer, as I'm sure Scott talked about, is really quite important. So providing barriers is fantastic. Malorganite can be a barrier. Things that they eat almost all the time, arborvita. I mean, that's just like deer salad, hostas, you know, arborvita. I have actually found that the Western arbs, they're not particularly loving. And one in particular, Francie, has really been quite distasteful to them so far. Now, we expect that they will develop a taste for them, but there just must be that so much more oil in that plant that they're not really going out after it. So if it's a spot, and, you know, arborvitas really do provide a good evergreen in a shady spot, and that can be kind of tough to get otherwise. So if you want to give one a try, and you can find a small one, Francie is not bad, and that's the plicata. It's Thuja plicata is the Western. Anything else, you know, good luck with that. But, you know, if people out there, they want one, that might actually work. Now let's go to some of the unusual stuff that they don't like. Calycanthus is one of my absolute favorite shrubs, and it was thought to not be hardy this far north, and we're finding that, yes, it is. I ran across it down south, actually brought some samples up with me, and they did beautifully. And they flower in May, and they flower along the whole stem. And the flowers smell, you know, the named cultivars will actually have a delicious smell. It smells like a bowl of fruit, and in the afternoon. So it's a perfect cocktail shrub, so that by the time you're thinking, I need to have a cocktail, the shrub is smelling fabulous. The deer may munch on the ends just very, very lightly, but it flowers all along the stem, so you're not missing the entire flower of the plant. And they don't particularly like it. They may munch on the ends, and then they walk away. They don't like it. So that's one, and it's Calycanthus, Calycanthus. And red and yellow flowering, the white flowering I've also had pretty good luck with as well. Colquitia, and that's K-O-L-K-W-I-T-Z-I-A. Dreamcatcher is a lovely plant. It's very hard to find because it looks horrible in the pot. So people don't want to buy it. People are not going to sell it. You know, growers are not going to grow something that no one's going to buy. So they look horrible in the plant. If you can find them, they're fabulous. The deer do not bother them. They've got a chartreuse-colored leaf that has orange new growth on it, and then in the end of May, beginning of June, sometimes a little bit further into June, they'll have a trumpet-shaped pink flower that is absolutely outstanding. They do not touch that one at all.
Wow.
They also have not been touching fringe tree. So Cainanthus, it's C-H-I-O-N-A-N-thus, you know, spell it out. That one they don't seem to bother either. And that's got beautiful, beautiful white fringe in the spring. And then it's in the olive family, so it actually has clusters of things that look like olives in the summer. Very, very lovely. So that one they haven't been bothering either. In the past, I've had good luck with red leaf hazelnut. This year they decided they liked it. So, you know, nothing we can do about that. Also, they are not touching hellebores. So the hellebores have done extremely well. And I would say one of my favorite that is so hard to find, it's ridiculous, is Oryxa. It's O-R-I-X-A. It's a plant from Japan. The leaves are easily 8 inches long, 6 to 8 inches long, shiny green, and it has a very herby scent to the leaves. Flowers are inconsequential, but it's a deciduous plant that can actually be hedged. It can just be left go. It's very outstanding in the garden, and they don't touch it for anything. And, you know, that kind of stuff is really important to know.
Yeah, really important.
I mean, right there you now have some plants that if they do touch them, they're not going to touch them hard, and you will actually have something going on in the yard.
Wonderful suggestions. Let's go to Carrie in Fond du Lac, who has a question for you or a suggestion. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, it's Carrie with a T, but hello, you guys. I thought that was faint praise for currants, and I called the plug currants.
So sorry about that. You praise away. They're wonderful plants. Praise away.
We grow black, white, and red ones. There are lots of varieties available. We buy them from Rain Tree. And they're wonderful fruits. It's the best tasting jelly you can imagine, the black ones. And the reds are wonderful. They're very tart. But one thing I really like about them is the unripe fruit is what we use for pectin to make jelly from our black raspberries out of the woods, because those unripe fruits are very hard to process to get the seeds out. And I just think they're the most delicious thing around. and they're wonderful in fruit salads, the red tart berries. And the important thing, the reason I called is because they weren't on your list when you talked about things that grow well in shade. We grow ours under a box elder tree. And they're a wonderful part shade thing, and they're also very beautiful. So that's my plug.
Terry, thank you.
Love it. You're absolutely right. I was fainted my praise for the current. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Terry.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, so a vote for currants. Let's go to Jim in West Allis. Hi, Jim.
Oh, hello. Say, this is a comment regarding the lady with the mulberry problem. Mulberry trees actually come either male or female, and if she's got a male tree, all it's going to get is catkins and never get fruit.
Yeah,
so yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the reminder.
Yeah.
She look for those catkins in spring.
Yeah. And often when we have wild ones coming up, we don't even think about whether they're male or female because we'll have plenty of each. So thank you very much for the reminder.
Thanks. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Carol in Sun Prairie. Thanks for calling. Hi.
I was calling about the garden huckleberries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's an annual plant. It's first cousin to tomatoes. It's in that family. And they do have beautiful berries, and they do produce quite well. I put in 9 plants one year, and I canned over 60 quarts of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you have to wait until they're dead ripe. Because before that, they're not good to eat.
Definitely for us, they are known as annuals. So that's where if he can get one to survive, I say we all want part of that. We all want a few of those.
Absolutely. Thanks, Carol. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, let's see. We've got, you can join in too, number 1-800-642-1234. Sandra in Rockton, Illinois, up next. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I don't have a specific question regarding fruit, but it's possible. I have 2 containers of organic fertilizer. We just cleaned out our garage, and we've been here 10 years, moved here from Philadelphia. And I came across this liquid organic fertilizer. And I'm wondering, it's probably maybe 12 years old. Is it still good? Because I'm trying to fertilize my plants. I got a late start this year because my husband had a health issue. But should I just throw it away, or would it harm the plants? Or
I don't think it would harm the plants, but I would wonder whether it's going to have any value. But if it was stored at a cool temperature and in something that's somewhat dark, it's possible that it might be okay. I don't think you're going to create a toxic mess with it, quite frankly, if it's an organic fertilizer. If anything, it's just not going, it's going to be liquid that's not really worth a whole lot. Do you have a compost pile?
No, we live in a condo.
Oh, okay, so
there are restrictions.
Yeah, so definitely.
I'm not allowed to do that.
Otherwise, what I would do is just try a little bit and put it on something that, you know, really doesn't make much difference if you lose it.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit of turf or something like that. And
See
what it does. The only thing I would worry about is if it burned something. So I don't think you're going to have to worry about it. I just don't think you're going to have much for fertility.
Yeah.
Okay.
It, organic typically is not going to last as long as some of the synthetics.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Good luck.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Sandra. Rocky in Neshkoro, your turn. Hi, Rocky.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had I've got a couple of apple trees that were planted years ago by somebody that were for the deer. And about 2 years ago, we went through a drought, and I was trying to help them come back. I water them a lot and stuff, but is there any, like, fertilizer or something I could add to it?
You could add anything that's labeled for apple, and right now would be an okay time. The fruit is actually formed, and you're not going to increase the vegetative growth over the fruit growth. And I would say the most important thing that you can do is just to continue to water to bring them back. That is really, really important. Getting getting some mulch down around that root zone will help out as well. It's the studies have shown that it doesn't do that much, but even every little bit that you can do is fantastic. But something that's labeled for fruit crops would be wonderful.
Yep, there you go.
And one more comment too. Somebody was talking about shaded something to eat in the shade. How about asparagus?
There you go.
Yeah,
that's a nice one. Good job.
Asparagus, you betcha. They'll grow in the shade.
They'll grow okay. Yeah, they won't be as big, but you know sometimes that's better than nothing.
Marty in Douglas County says they have valerian everywhere. How do they get rid of it?
Oh, good luck with that. Which kind of valerian are you talking about?
Don't know.
That's the tough thing. That is one of those that if you have a huge, huge planting of it, I would do the two-man approach again. It's the cut and the spray, and see what you can do to get rid of it. If it's a perennial valerian, then that's going to be about your best option. If it's an annual, yanking would take care of it just fine.
On to Jack in the Twin Cities. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, I got a question on a persimmon tree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I ordered it from a catalog, and it says it's self-pollinating.
Yeah.
And it's the coldest one I can find in mm-hmm. the catalog, but it's been like about 5 to 8 years now, and I have some flowers on there, and mm-hmm. I see little bees pollinating it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not getting any fruit.
Okay, but you did have flowers, and when did they flower?
Just recently.
You know, even though they're self-fruitful, I would say getting another cultivar that is a proven pollinator might be a good idea, because you're in a much colder climate than what persimmons really are used to growing in. Was it a zone 5 that you got?
Yeah, it's the coldest one I can find, but I don't know if I can find another cultivar that's that hardy.
Yeah, that is going to be tough. And it might be, if it just flowered, it might be that you're not going to have a long enough growing season to actually get some fruit on that. The persimmons that grow this far north are not going to be the large persimmons that you can get at the grocery store. They're not going to be, because those are typically a Japanese type persimmon that grow in a warmer climate. But you should, I would watch over the next couple of months and see what you get. And otherwise, look around for a pollinator to give it that added oomph. You may even have to think about covering in the spring.
And thanks a lot for that question, Jack. Appreciate your call. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Ho. With us on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network.